It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it's monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skippy and Fanny Show, episode 4.3.
Celebrating our nation's independence from aliens because Roland Emmerich told us to.
Yay for Independence Day reference. It's a good movie.
It really is a good movie. As much crap as we give Roland Emmerich.
That's the best thing he's ever done.
Probably.
Yeah, that's a classic. Anywho, this episode is actually our take on the Story South Million Writers Award top 10 stories. These are the stories that are basically up for vote. The voting ends on the 6th, correct?
Yes, on the 6th.
Cool. So you will get this, obviously, on the 4th, and you have 2 days to read everything and then go vote on your favorite or favorites. Is it multiple votes or is it single votes? I don't know.
One time for your favorite story.
Okay, so you vote for this one story you like. Okay,
yes.
Good.
Which makes it a little bit tough.
It does, because there are a couple really good stories in here that I would have trouble picking one, I think, now that I think about it. Yeah.
Exactly. So the judges for this are actually D. Antoine Stewart and Jason Sanford, and they picked the top 10 from a list of 158 stories, and now we have the top 10, and we're going to go through those real quick and give our impressions of them, whether or not we think they're good, bad, boring, interesting, different, or
You're
not.
Making this all sound very exciting.
I know, right?
Okay, so why don't we start, we'll just go down the list in the order it's listed on Million Writers Award, because that's the way I picked them out, and oddly enough, they didn't come in the same order when I put them in my Nook book, but whatever. So let's start with Hell Dogs by Daphne Buter. It's in the magazine Frigg, the strange name for a magazine.
I think it's a Norwegian, Swedish, some sort of Scandinavian country magazine.
Well, it's Finland, I think, is where it's okay, set. Then. So, if I recall correctly, they refer to Finland, like, once.
Yes, I believe so.
I think so. I could be mixing that up with another story, which has...
No, it's in Holland. It's Dutch.
It's Dutch? Okay, I'm sorry. Then there was some Finnish thing mentioned. Anyway, okay. So, Hell Dogs is basically... I wanted to like this story a lot, because it's basically just a story about male men and their relationship with dogs. And I wanted to like it because it starts off that way where it was a male woman, but
male woman, yes.
You know, talking about all the dogs and they're like evil and yada, yada, you know, and then it gets to the end and she gets this weird letter. And that was the point where I was like, oh, this is suddenly interesting because it's a really weird, like, I was like, what is the letter from? Did she write a letter to herself from the future? Like, or is it the guy in the house wrote the letter? But then it just ends. It ends right there when she gets the letter.
Yeah. I was very confused by that, only because the majority of the story is actually fairly normal seeming. You don't have a lot going on. It's just this woman becoming a male woman and then dealing with the dogs and how she's afraid of the dogs.
It's just cliche stuff we've seen in every child's cartoon for the last 60 years.
Kind of, except that, I mean, at a certain point you get a little bit more into the dogs and the dogs seem a little bit more interesting.
Not to me. I didn't care.
Kind of, you know, I don't know. At least the way that she's describing it is interesting.
Okay.
But then, yes. And then suddenly you get the weird random switch to this letter that I still don't understand, and I probably never will.
Well, they stop there. The most interesting part is that letter.
Yeah.
That's the point when you're like, oh my gosh, like they've totally tricked you into thinking this is just a stupid story about a mailman and dogs.
And
then And then it's not. There's like some weird time travel or something, but it stops.
I don't know if it's time travel so much as it is like the dogs are somehow to sort of like self-expression of her.
Maybe.
The letter tells her that they're not important and they're just part of a story and you're just part of a story.
Yeah, like maybe it's like the author wrote the letter to his characters.
I don't
or
know.
Or she did. It's weird.
It is.
It's just, but it doesn't do anything when it gets to that point. It just moves on, and that was what ruined it for me.
Agreed. So I was intrigued by the story. I was like you. I wanted to really like it, and then it dies, and yeah. So it doesn't win.
All right, so let's talk about then Adam's favorite story, which is RVs by Adam Troy Castro, published in Lightspeed Magazine. This has probably the best idea-based story like that we've seen in a long time in science fiction, in terms of the idea that like he took an idea, he extrapolated upon it, and then he wrote a story about what that would be, like speculating on a possibility, which the essential premise is it's the future, there's no normal birth, nobody gives birth anymore. They've changed the philosophy of life, is that, well, living a regular life is awful, it's terrible, so they like have themselves inserted into other forms, into other people, and they live
right.
And those are called the RVs, and they're just basically vessels.
Specifically, it's that life begins at conception and you die at birth.
Right, right.
So, or legally, you die at birth. So the RVs are actually the legally dead people.
Right.
Who are kept in this drugged state so that they don't feel much of anything except contentment. And the, you know, gestating babies, the fetuses are hanging around in the RVs and experiencing this incredibly full life because the RVs themselves are enhanced. It's a brilliant, I loved this story.
It's really good.
I loved not just the concept of, you know, the RVs themselves, but the execution of it with the contents, you know, statement of intent, contents, appearance. Like, it has a very specific structure that's like an outline, except the story is occurring within the outline.
Right, right. It's told in snippets of, like they're different sections. Like, there's two sections about gestation, and there's, you know, they're various sections, but they're these little snippets that just kind of jump through this character's life on her journey to,
right.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to ruin what the journey is, but, you know, it is a fascinating journey, and it's a really clever story.
It is very clever. I'm not sure I quite understand where he was... from a philosophical standpoint, what he was saying.
That would take some deeper... I mean, we didn't take a lot of time on these. He would take a little deeper thinking about it, I think.
It would, and this is the one story that I felt like really deserved that further exploration.
I agree. No, it's a very...
More than a lot of the other ones. I mean, not all of the other ones, but one deserves getting broken down and analyzed.
Yeah, and the ending is really, like, dark.
Very, very dark.
Twisted, and it is in a lot of ways, like, I mean, he's really thinking to, like, this is the possibility of our medical technology at some point, and this is what might happen to the human race.
There was actually just a story in one of the news scientists magazines about... womb transplantation.
There you go.
So I read this story and then I heard that and I was like, oh, okay then. I guess it's totally going to happen.
It's a little scary. Cool. So it seems like we both really liked RVs.
Yes. Definitely.
Top three for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I agree. It's in my top three. All right. So let's go to Amal El Motar's. I'm sorry. I'm going to mispronounce that name. Amal El Motar. I'm gonna hope that sounds right, right?
No, it's actually by Jason Sizemore.
The Green Book?
No, it isn't. Maybe
it's by
it is.
Amal
no, it's
El
right.
Motar.
It's Amal
Jason
El Motar.
Sizemore publishes Apex.
You're right. Okay, I'm just an idiot. Okay. And yes,
it's called the Green Book. And it's hard to describe it because it's this weird, it's fragments from a manuscript in a fantasy world that, but it's from, or it's fragments from a book from a fantasy world in which, as we learn through the book, that the book has someone inside it. Like there's a person living inside the book who's writing, and that the person writing in the book to the person inside the book, this is getting confusing.
It is. It's a story within a story within a story.
Right. It's really, and it's sort of like, so it starts with all of these, like the letters to these people, and they're talking, this guy is talking back and forth, but it's all very fragmented. And so you have things where it says like, this is in the first person's hand, whoever the first person who wrote it is. And then there's the second hand, there's a third and a fourth. And it's like, it goes back and forth, but there's also, again, this story within it between this character inside the book and the person writing to that person.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So, but of course there's lots of things missing from the piece. It's marked as like, you know, decay, several leaves lost. Like this is marked like 3 or 4 times in the text of stuff that's just missing. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really clever in terms of its structure.
Agreed. Again, this is, you know, like RBs with the interesting form. This is another one that plays with how you can write a story. So this was one of my tops, personally.
Yeah, I'm right at this moment. I'm thinking it's in my top 3. It's really clever. I have reservations about it.
Agreed. I don't know if it actually explores this whole idea as much as it could.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. There were little things at the end that I definitely wanted to see more of the story, I think.
Yeah, I think this is another story that we probably would need to reread because there are probably lots of little clues in the text that she's left there for us.
Agreed.
That sort of explain, because the end of the text has just one person almost basically talking to themselves. And then you get the hint, like now she's talking to someone other than Lewin, who is the main character she's been talking to. She's the person inside the book is the she. So, but that, and then it stops there, and it's not clear, well, who is she talking to?
I actually think at the end she's talking to the other character. There's
the person who's talking about this, yeah.
Yeah, the person who's talking about this, because he picks up the book, reads the things that are written between her and Lewin, and then he adds his own. So, I think that's the, or at least she somehow realizes that he's reading it. I don't know how it works, but anyway, I liked it. I'm putting it in my top 3. But again, yeah, you're right. There are a few things that I wanted to see explored more. And like you said, maybe they are explored more, and I just didn't read it closely enough. So who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's
very
a good story,
interesting.
So I agree, yeah. Agree. So why don't we then, we'll skip over to Do You Have a Place for Me by Roxane Gay. Which, did I read this one?
I don't know. Did you read this one?
I don't even remember this story.
It's a story written in the first person, about a woman who is carrying on a relationship with another woman.
No, I remember. I remember now. Okay.
They like escape from their regular lives and they go have exciting stolen days. And it's a really sweet story, but, I don't know. Like for me, it's just, it doesn't do anything particularly fascinating or.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because it goes through the scene in which they're talking. The main person who's talking is talking about this fellow they've met in like a bar, and they're gonna, and she's talking about what they're going to do with him, which is they're gonna bring him back and they're gonna get him drunk and like get all excited and then kick him out and this whole ordeal. But then it just sort of, that's it, like, and that is just kind of like this lovey-dovey at the end.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's specifically, she's writing it to the other woman. So you don't even know if any of this actually happens. It's we will do this in the future.
Right.
And it's more like a wish, a desire to do all of this. But I think they both realize that it can never happen sort of thing. And that does make it very interesting. And I liked the passion that you can feel in the story.
Sure, sure. But it does seem like it's just, it it's sort of not in the same sense that Hell Dogs does, but it does seem like it goes somewhere and then it stops. There's so much more that could be going on.
I don't know if any more needs to be going on with it.
Hmm.
I honestly think it actually stops where it should stop, at the end of, you know, not at the end of their relationship, but at the
end of her letter to this person.
Oh, right. I think it's a good stopping point.
Okay.
You know, it is a short story. I don't think it really needed to say much more. It, obviously, not science fiction or fantasy.
No.
Well, in one sense, it's a fantasy, but but it is a good. It's a solid story, I think.
Okay. Well, but at the same time, it doesn't quite meet the burden of interest, for lack of a better phrase.
Yes.
Okay. No, I mean, I agree with you. I read that piece. I thought it was cute, but it didn't offer anything to me that the only thing I thought was compelling was that it's told in future perspective.
Yes.
In that everything is, you know, we will do X, we will do this, we will, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And that's an interesting viewpoint to go at a story like that from.
Yeah.
So, yeah, agreed. Like I said, solid story.
Yeah, and that's in Spork Press, another online magazine. So,
well, all of these are in online print magazines. None of them are from print magazines, even if there is a online division of the print magazine.
Right, right. Okay.
So, the whole point.
All right, so the next one is from Andrebo, which is by Spencer Kealamakia. Kealamakia? I think that's how you say it.
You have the name. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the story is called Here is David, the Greatest of Descendants. And it's more or less, it's about a little boy in Hawaii living in a kind of a broken family. His father is, well, I mean, I guess the best way to describe him is a total dick. And he's like a pothead, and or I'm assuming he was on pot or he was on something, sort of a drunk. And his mother's kind of absent. She's there, but she's not. And it's sort of about this little boy kind of trying to find his own way within this situation. And so you have all these like little moments where he's talking about like making up dialogue for his action figures. You know, he's got like Batman, and Batman says stuff, and he has these fights with like Wolverine, and Wolverine ends up victorious. And there's all of this stuff layered in under what is this family drama, what's going on between them. And of course there's the issue with the Night Marchers.
I had to look it up because I thought it might be based in Hawaiian mythology, and it is. Night Marchers are warriors, and they kind of go into this end of the story, but they're warriors that will wander where old battlefields are, and they will take you away with them if you look them in the eye.
Right.
And so throughout the story, this little boy is, you know, hoping, you know, that nobody takes him or his mother. And then eventually his father, that the Night Marchers won't steal them away. But he's forced to, I think particularly since, you know, there's big fights, like you said, broken home. There's fighting going on between the parents. So
yeah.
Even though the father tells him, they only go where mean battles have taken place.
Well, his father's really mean. There's a whole part in the book where he's just throwing stuff around the house and breaking
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. So his home to him is a place that night marchers wander.
Yeah.
And he doesn't feel safe at home. It's a dark story, and it doesn't resolve. The darkness doesn't resolve, really.
No,
and
but
just,
at the same time,
you just really hope that he survives it.
Yeah,
I loved this story. It's a very quiet story. But it's well written, I think, and
it's a good use of the mythology. It's a good
yes.
use of the fact that it's told from his perspective, so we see everything through his eyes of what's going on, which is a lot different than perhaps seeing it through one of the parents' eyes.
Right. Yeah, it focuses very clearly on him.
Kawika, yeah.
Yes, and it's very I can't really call it sweet, but it's touching, and sometimes good and sometimes bad ways.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a really, really, really good story. So
it is.
I definitely recommend people read that. But we shall scoot on now to The Incorrupt Body of Carlo Busso by Eric Maroney. It's in Eclectica. Mm-hmm. And this is a story that I didn't much care for.
it was an odd little story. I wouldn't say I didn't like it, but I'm not going to cheerlead for it, basically.
No, I mean, there's the whole deal. I mean, it's rooted in the Catholic mythology about the bodies of saints. Like, saints, their bodies are uncorrupt, so when they, like, exhume their bodies, they're in perfect shape, basically. They look like they've always been there, and they're supposed to smell sweet. But that's all played out, and then at the end, this is what happens to Carlo Busso. But, like, I just don't get... I don't understand what the whole point is. I mean, are they implying that he's a saint? Are they implying that... making this a criticism of religion, that this is all just a load of hokey, that anybody could end up being sainted?
I think it's more... He's not sainted by the church. He's sainted by his mother and grandmother. It goes through that whole, he's been beatified or beatified, whatever. Beatified?
Sure.
I don't even know how they pronounce it. From a very young age, because of how his mother and his grandmother treat him. You know, he's perfect in every way. And I thought that was the only really interesting thing about it, is that the reason he becomes a saint, it's not so much that he actually is a saint, because he's not. He's kind of a brat. He's spoiled. But because of how his mother and his grandmother treat him, that he's obviously perfect in every way.
But that's really weird, because the mother should know better, because she asks him to go with his grandma to church, and he refuses to go until she says, "I'll pay you."
Right. It doesn't matter, because in their eyes, he can do no wrong.
Okay. Well, then, I guess...
criticism of parenting of anything.
Through the meta... Okay, well, whatever. I mean, it's just a story that I kind of got through the end of, and I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That was my impression, too. So, next.
Next one is Cancer Party by Nicola Mason from Blackbird, which is from VCU. What is VCU?
I don't know. Online journal of literature and the arts.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out what school that was attached to. So, anyway, it's kind of a weird little story told from the perspective of a group of people who have come to their friend Cliff's party. Cliff has cancer. It's implied that he's dying, although there all of this attempts to make hope. And so they're supposed to come to the party and play the parts of doctors and be really sort of morbid and creepy. And I guess in a way to sort of lighten the mood over the fact that Cliff is going to die.
It's him trying to deal with it and them trying to deal with it. And they get to it at one point. I believe it's, you're not going to just ignore me suddenly or, you know, because I'm dying. And he's worried that he's going to get forgotten, I think. Or ignored, because it's such a depressing thing. And so he's forcing them to deal with it. Whether or not it's the best way to deal with it, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very strange way to deal with it.
Right. It's morbid, for sure. But I think they all... By the end of it, you get the impression that they do all benefit from the experience, even if they have to deal with some very difficult things.
Sure.
I really liked this story.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's...
I'm a cancer survivor, so all of this, I was kind of like, this is not the experience of a cancer survivor. So... I mean,
a cancer survivor. What about somebody who's definitely going to die?
Well, I mean, when you have cancer, I mean, there's no there's no certainty that you're going to live, let alone that you're going to die. I mean, even when a doctor says your chances are of surviving are like 1%, like, I mean, it's all uncertain. Cancer is just a death note. You find out you have cancer, it doesn't matter if your chances of survival are 75% or not. There's still that 25% chance that you aren't going to be the one that makes it. So
that's true.
So from a cancer person's perspective, somebody who survived cancer, like, this was, I mean, none of this was my experience. So it was hard for me to connect with it because I didn't have this. I mean, I'm not saying that, like, I wasn't afraid I was going to die or whatever. Like, I was fucking terrified, to be honest. Right. But at the same time, I'm like, okay. Like, I just didn't connect with the character. I thought the character was kind of being a douche to his friends.
No, I agree. I never connected with the cancer with Cliff. I connected with the party.
Okay.
And I think that's who you're supposed to be connecting with. I mean, it is told from their perspective. Cliff is kind of this, you know, he's very separate, even though he's there.
Yeah.
Even though they're trying to deal with it, you know, he is definitely separate. I mean, at the end, they're thinking about him doing things and not actually participating in the doing of those things. I don't know. I could see this from, like, my mother, her brother died of cancer, and I could see her going through kind of this process of, I think they actually go through the stages of grief in the story. I'd have to read it again to be sure.
Yeah.
You know, the acceptance, denial, whatever this series is.
Yeah.
They go through that, and I liked it for the journey that they were taking.
Okay.
And I liked the humor, even if it is morbid.
Yeah, I guess I just didn't connect with it.
I just
had my own issues. But maybe it's because I just have a very different experience.
That's probably.
Perspective is
I one... could see that. When I was reading it, I thought of you and I was like, well, Duke's either going to love or hate this.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It just got to the point where at the end of it, I was like, why are they friends with this guy? Because right now he's being so much of a dick to them.
Yes.
Like, they're trying to help him. They're trying to be there for him. They're trying to be, you know, to give him hope. And he's just like, I want you to be doctors and be morbid. And look at this. Here's my port. I'm dying. Woo. It's like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, he's a little bit sick and twisted.
Like, I just don't understand. That for me would be like, I don't know. I wouldn't do that to somebody. But
yeah.
Maybe because I'm not that kind of person. I don't know. Usually, though, when you get cancer, when somebody gets cancer, most people, like, have, like, an awakening.
Right.
They suddenly realize they've been jerks to everybody. And this guy just doesn't seem like he has that.
Maybe he's always been a nice guy, and
this is his chance to be a... So, sort of like Breaking Bad, where the guy finds out he's dying, and he decides to just go break a whole crap load of laws.
Exactly.
Oh, maybe. I mean, maybe. Maybe that's, like...
I have no idea.
But I get the impression that Cliff is a fairly young guy.
I got the impression he was in his 20s or 30s.
Right, so, but if he's in his 20s, that's not a big deal. Like, but if you're, you know, 45 or 50, and you suddenly find it... Or, like, 40, and you find out you're dying, like, you're gonna have your midlife crisis right then.
Yes.
Whereas at 20, like...
Yeah, I don't know. I get what you're saying, but I actually... I don't know. I liked it.
Whatever. Jerk.
Not in my top three, but I did like it, so...
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on then to one from Subterranean Press, which is Elegy for a Young Elk by Hanu Rajanemi, who obviously just recently came out with The Quantum Thief, the book, not recently, but this year in the U.S., last year in the U.K., if I recall correctly, getting a lot of play. I almost feel like this is somehow connected to it, but I could be wrong. This is a very, very interesting story, actually. It's another one of my favorites from the list.
Yes.
It's told almost like in a weird post-apocalyptic landscape in which there's a guy who, I mean, it's hard to describe. There's like things like firewalls. There's like quantum mechanics in this. There's
Well, it specifically sounds like, I mean, the talking bear, you've got the squirrels, and you've got all these things that I think have been manipulated by what people did. You know, the reason that there's a talking bear is probably because it's been infected by nanomaterials in some way, shape, or form.
Right. They say there's a plague in the book that does something awful.
And what he's, the main character specifically is a poet, but he's struggling with being a poet because other people who have not decided to remain on Earth, have essentially become gods. And he feels like they've taken all the poetry and they've done everything amazing. So what am I? I'm pointless.
Hmm. Oh, that's an interesting way to think about it. Yeah, no, and there's, of course, there's an issue where there's like a family narrative here.
Yes.
You realize fairly early on that something has happened to his son, and only in the end do you find out what happened to his son. And there is sort of like there's this adventure that's going on because he needs to get something for the gods. So it starts off in a lot of ways with all these subtle hints that this is not quite a fantasy world, but it's only really like towards the middle that all of that sort of traditional fantasy with gods, sort of that kind of thing, that starts to get torn apart.
And yeah,
you realize this
actually
is actually science fiction.
Yeah, in the beginning, it seems like a very Norse. This is the one that takes place in Finland or something.
Yeah,
very Norse-based mythology. Until you realize it isn't. You know, it reminded me of reading the beginning of Neil Gaiman's, what's it called? His short
American
story,
Gods?
The Frost Giants.
Oh,
no,
Frost
The Frost
Giants.
Giants.
Okay.
The kid's story about the boy who meets Thor, Odin, and Loki, I think it is. Very, you know, it's kind of the quiet beginning, you know, except very intelligent squirrels. Until you realize, maybe there's something else going on.
Yeah.
And I liked the science fiction elements playing into a traditional mythology.
Yeah, no, I really like that. I think this is one of my favorite stories. It's in my top three, which of course says something about me that all of my top three are science fiction
and fantasy. Yeah, that probably does say something about you.
This one is tied for right at the moment, actually based on all the ones we've gone through. This one's tied for me for the one I would pick to vote for, which the other one would be RVs. I would vote for either RVs or this one because I think both are really brilliant pieces of work. But man, I mean, this is a damn good piece. And it's setting up so much more that he could do with this world.
Oh, yeah. You have an entire world getting based on this. And I'm still, right now, I'm still tending towards RVs, but we'll
see.
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you'll have to decide. But yeah, this is a really good story. I think everybody should read this one.
Yes, for sure. Especially our listeners who are tend
skip
to be
fanny.
Skiffy, fancy people, obviously. We'll go into the last story real quick, and then we'll review. So the last story is Most of Them Would Follow Wandering Fires by Amber Sparks, and it was published in Barrel House.
Yep.
And
go ahead.
I had to make a top four.
Oh.
Because of this one.
I didn't like this one.
You didn't?
No.
It's really simple. I don't think it's... Like I said, it's top four, but it's on the bottom of the top four. But these were my four, I suppose, it's because they're all fantasy and science fiction, though, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to be biased in that sense already.
Exactly. Okay, well, this is one of the science fiction and fantasy stories. We'll just go with that. It's not actually top four. But it is... I had to read it the second time because I didn't notice one of the elements at first.
What
it's
element?
It's about a hero's journey, but it's told in reverse.
Right.
And that's like when I'm going through it, I totally did not pick up on the whole reverse journey thing.
But it tells you because it gives you the numbers going in reverse.
I wasn't paying attention to the numbers.
Oh.
No attention to the numbers whatsoever, which made it an interesting experience to read. so I had to go through, but I liked what I liked about it is that it blended, it's not even so much a science fiction or a fantasy. It's blending all different types of hero's journeys.
Sure, sure.
A normal, you know, hero, a fireman or something, a soldier. It could also be, you know, like a knight's journey or a classic adventurer story or even...
Right, there's aspects of that in here. All of those things that are here.
It combines aspects of almost all genres in one story. It discusses the aspects, but not even so much discusses, but at least mentions and it uses them as elements in this story. And that's what I enjoyed about it. I liked the juxtaposition of, you know, particularly in the sixth section when they talk about things that will tempt you to stray from the path. And it goes through a woman, a battle, a bag of gold, a sword, a gun, a stack of jeans, a powder brick, a crown, a letter, a baseball, a pipe, a half pipe, a fortune teller's tale, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I really enjoyed that blending. But, like I said, I'm not sure it works in reverse.
The only thing that I found very compelling about this is the fact that it is in reverse and that it's trying to do what you already pointed out, which is tell a hero's journey in all of its different skins at the same time. But beyond that, I just like this to me is just sort of like a gimmick story.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I said I don't think it needed to be in reverse.
Well, I mean, but maybe because if you put it in normal way, it would just be...
Maybe you wouldn't pay attention to the melding of things?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it'd be hard to say now because you've read it in reverse, so...
I went back and read it forwards.
Let's give it to somebody. Let's give it to a friend and have them read it forwards and see...
Right.
And then give it... Yeah. Yeah, see if their opinions are somehow vastly different than our own. We need a guinea pig. Who wants to be a guinea pig?
Somebody who has not read the story.
Yeah, somebody who's not. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're already biased by what we're saying. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of a gimmick story. I mean, it's kind of clever, but at the same time, I'm like, but this is not for me adding anything, I guess. I mean, for me, a good science fiction or fantasy story, as loosely as this is tied to it, it has to further the genre. It can't just be a gimmick. It can't just say, oh, I'm doing something clever with language or, oh, I'm doing something clever with structure. It can't just do that. It has to do more.
Agree. Totally, absolutely agreed. But because, like I said, I don't think you can put it into a specific genre. At least, I'm sure it has its own genre. But, you know, to me, it actually works because it is a short story. I agree it is gimmicky, though. But for a short story, I want to see more of the playing with things than I do in, like, a longer piece.
Sure, sure.
So I think that's it. It's okay that... The gimmicks are used almost, except that they are totally gimmicks, and they're almost too obvious as gimmicks.
Yeah, I mean,
and that I find a little bit insulting as a reader.
If you know? Really wanted to read a story that was told backwards, that's really good. Daniel Wallace wrote a book called Ray in Reverse, which is about a guy. It's framed by two sections where it's in the present, his present. In which he's in heaven or version of heaven, and he's going through what heaven's version of, like, psych therapy, like group therapy for people who've died to, like, talk about their last moments. And it's framed by these two moments, but everything in between is him going backwards through his life.
That sounds depressing.
It sounds depressing, but it's actually really, really fascinating because you learn about his life.
Excuse me. There have been some really great things done in reverse, obviously. But when it kind of throws itself at you as this is a story in reverse, then it's not so interesting, I guess.
No, Ray in Reverse is brilliant.
Right. Okay. So yeah. The last story is one that Sean didn't read, but I did, and it's Arthur Arellano by Viet Tan Nguyen.
When?
That was
when?
Is it when?
It's called When.
Okay, sorry.
No, I had that mistake. I had a student who's, and I said Nguyen, and that was totally wrong, and I got laughed at.
I knew it wasn't Nguyen. I thought it was Nguyen. It's but what? Anyway, published in Narrative Magazine. It's the story of a man who gets a kidney.
or was it a liver?
A liver. Sorry, a liver.
Whatever.
And he's dealing with the fact that his life is basically crap and... yeah.
Clearly you didn't like it.
No, I just... It's not that it was a bad story. It wasn't at all. I just didn't have much of a connection with any element of it.
Okay. That makes sense.
Actually, there were a couple of things that I totally had connection with, but they were not quite as pronounced parts of the story as others. So it's kind of a depressing story. It's telling about the life of this very kind of sad, pitiful man. And I just felt sorry for his wife by the end of it. So,
okay. Well, clearly didn't like it. So just a quick recap, your top three.
We'll go through my top three are, I'm going to go with RVs, Elegy for Young Elk, and Here's David, the Greatest of Descendants.
Okay, well, mine would be RV's Elegy for a Young Elk, and probably The Green Book.
The Green Book?
Oh, no, because Here's David is good, too.
It's a really good story. I mean, it's... Like I said, it's a very quiet story.
Sure,
but it's
sure.
So precise.
I'll say that too. I mean, I like The Green Book, but I think Here's David is more solid of a tale.
Exactly. The doing. Green Book just has a couple too many issues for me. But like to me, honestly, like I really enjoyed Elegy for a Young Elk, but I don't think it was perfect.
Yeah, and I just realized all the people we selected are dudes. Yeah. Well, if we did to four, I would put The Green Book in there. But I didn't think The Green Book was as good as the other three. So,
but and like I said, I'm actually torn on Elegy for Young Elk.
I really like it. I agree that there are some flaws with it, but I just like I loved all of the weird nanotechnology.
Yeah, I really liked what it was playing with, but to me, like, RVs was just brilliant.
Yeah.
I think. Cool. And Here's David, the Greatest of Descendants was just such a beautiful piece. So, I mean, that's what I'm going to be torn between, to be honest, is
RVs and that.
David. Mm. Cool. They're very different stories. Very, very different. In every way. So, but yeah.
Alrighty, well, if anybody would like to throw in their opinion, they can easily do that. We'd love to hear what you think about the stories, what your top three are. You can let us know by leaving a comment on our blog.
Skiffy and Fanty, no, that's not our blog. Our blog is skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com.
Yeah, which was the same thing you started with.
Well, yeah, but I was leading towards skiffyandfanty@gmail.com,
which is our
email.
Yeah.
That you can, you know, send us email at.
Yeah, or you could just send us a Twitter message too. Although that'd be difficult because they're long titles. But you know, you could just send Twitter message with the author titles. So
yes, twitter.com/skiffyandfanty, and you can find all of these stories at storysouth.com/millionwriters.html. Definitely worth reading for sure. Even the ones that you know we were a little bit more critical of. These are good stories all around. And vote.
Well, I mean, there's one story that I think is crap, but
right, basically.
Well, and you think there might be two stories that you think is crap, but
very potentially.
Because I haven't read the one story, so
exactly. No, it's not crap. like I said, all these stories are good. It's just that some are so much better than others that, you know, you got it. But you guys figure it out on your own and vote for it. You've got until the 6th. And yeah, that's all there is to it.
Alrighty, so that is the end of our Story South special episode show, and we will see you next week with, what are we doing next week, Jen?
We are doing a random news discussion next week.
Okay, we'll try to make it more discussion-based than random
but
news.
But the week after that is going to be very exciting.
Right, because we have...
Stina Liked.
Yep, and after that it'll be Torture Cinema, and then we've got lots more author fun stuff.
Exactly.
Coming up.
It's going to be a good month. And we will see you guys next week.
Cool. All right. Bye. Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.